This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 386.
Hi.
That there is Glyn Lavender from creativephotoworkshops.com.au. And this is Bruce Williams.
You weren't saying hi to me?
Will you shut up? Jeez.
What?
Here I was trying to turn it around for you. Do something a bit different.
I normally reply. I said hi. So I was just going to say, who told you? No. Can you tell? Is it my eyes?
Oh, man. 2 weeks off and it's all gone to shite.
That's all gone back to all. The good thing is people can listen to the first couple of seconds and go, I'll still the same crap and turn off. We've saved them 10, 15, 20 minutes easily.
Right.
Or straight away they've gone, oh, Dave Marlin's not on, so we might as well hang up. You know, Glyn's back. Bang. Because what really made me during this last 2 weeks hiatus was Facebook kept reminding me that this Shutters Inc. podcast is performing 85% better than the normal podcast. And it was Dave Marlin, you know?
Yeah.
So I see with it. Love that. Yeah, I get it. I get it. You know? Deep underneath this callous, uncaring exterior, there's a callous, uncaring interior. I don't care.
How's your two weeks been?
I've missed you, Bruce.
You what?
I'd like to
say you'd like to say it, but you won't.
I was quite relieved when he said last week, you know, oh, I'm too tired.
Because
I was a bit the same. It was the first week of school holidays last week, and I was feeling the pain.
Right.
I'm more than halfway through. I'm over hump day.
I didn't say I was tired. I just said, let's take a week off. And you went, woohoo.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah. Respect. Yeah. I read between the lines, too, or between the letters in your case. There was only one line. I've been well. I've been busy. I've been doing stuff and playing with my new toys.
Oh yeah, which new toys are these?
I was out today as an example. Yeah. And I took a photo of this because it was really kind of cool. So I was still on school holidays, looking after the kids, which I love doing. We're down the beach and they're running around the beach, and I had it all going on. I was over the top of them with a drone.
Right.
I was zooming on them with my Tamron 18-400. Doesn't matter where they ran, they couldn't hide. And the 360 video camera going.
Nice.
I had all angles covered. I had every angle. There's no way they could run. There's no way they could hide.
Excellent.
My youngest, because where I was sitting, you couldn't see the water. I told them not to go in the water. My youngest put her feet in the water. I told her off straight away because the drone saw it all. Yeah. 50 metres up or not. I had them under full surveillance. Fabulous.
Nice.
So, It was really kind of, it's bizarre. These three things, they cover everything.
Yeah, right.
Aerial footage, 360-degree video and photo, and an 18-400, all-in-one powerhouse lens.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
You can
do a lot with these three.
Now, if only I could sling that 18-400mm lens off the Mavic Pro, then we'd be talking.
I'm trying to gaffer tape the 360 camera to it as we speak. But you know, if you had any form of talent, I'm speaking for both of us here. You could do quite a lot of stuff with just those three things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I've proven quite competently during the last 2 weeks that I'm no good at video. I've been trying to shoot video and then on the phone video, and I'm lousy at it.
Right.
But I'm blaming the technology. It's a bit sluggish. So I've been out shooting with my Insta360 ONE camera quite a bit this last week and a half or so, and testing out what's called the free capture feature. So somebody would go along, film everything in 360, and then with your phone, you've got to move around the scene and film just the bits you want to film.
Right.
It's quite phenomenal. So I shot a little, I think it was like a 45-second piece of footage of the kids this afternoon. No, it's longer than that. It's like a minute and 20, something like that.
Okay.
Footage of the kids down by this little room. Then I edited the same piece of footage four different ways.
Yeah, right.
Like one where the kid, and I'm using I bought a selfie stick. I hate to say it. I bought a selfie stick.
I did see that.
Yeah. You know, I know. I put the shame up on Facebook, let people know. But I bought the selfie stick. I bought the selfie stick for a reason to put onto this. 360 camera, so I could do the invisible selfie stick stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, so it makes the selfie stick disappear, which is kind of fun. So I bought that. And I think my favorite comment on Facebook was, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed in you for buying a selfie stick. I thought it was rather funny. That was from Andy, who runs Tamron in Australia. Thought it was rather funny. So I got this minute and 20 bit of footage, and then I edited one where the camera's looking back at me, and of course the selfie stick's invisible, so I'm just walking along, this camera basically tracking in front of me. Then I did another one where it was following the kids. I did one where it was looking at the sky, and then I did one where it was looking at the river as we were going along.
Right.
You know, and you can pan it, and it's shifting angles. Like it was quite remarkable what you can do with one piece of footage.
Yeah,
you
right.
You can produce, yeah. Almost like you've got two or three cameras shooting the scene.
Yeah, right.
And it's all done, I think, and you can do it afterwards.
Yeah.
So you can decide after you've shot what the story is, which imagine if you went to a marketplace or something overseas somewhere, no idea what's going to go on. You just walk through filming damn everything.
Yeah.
And then capture the moments that you want afterwards that were really cool.
Yeah. The time-consuming part of that is going through all that footage later to see the stuff that you didn't see with your own eyes at the time that you were shooting.
Because you've got to look at all three, because you've got to look at all 360 degrees.
Yeah.
Just watching the video forwards, because you can look up, you can look sideways and backwards. And, wow. But if you can all edit it all on your phone, it's fairly intuitive.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, you do look a bit stupid doing the editing, because you've got to move in that 360 universe. So I'm falling over tables.
Right.
You can't just sit there and just move the phone left and right, because you've got to do a full 360 yourself, you know?
Right.
If you want to follow something. So you look a bit daft. It's like you're playing a video game and moving around in real life. It's kind of amusing. So I've been having a bit of fun playing with that. I took my drone the other night with the girls out, and we flew it 5.8 kilometres up to the top of a volcano.
Wow.
Now, that sounds impressive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because you've got distance, a big distance, and a volcano, so you think you're going up 5.8K. That's a big volcano. It's an old, extinct volcano, and on the top is like a weather station.
Right.
So it's a bit boring. And I didn't realise how far away it was, because to the naked eye, it doesn't look that far away, because it's reasonably big.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sitting on this track in the middle of nowhere near our place. And we flew it over this farm and flew it. I'm talking to this home. I'm in the middle of this dirt road in the middle of absolutely nowhere, you know. This homeless guy comes up to me. It's night, just as night's coming in. His name's Carlu. And he lives in this old wrecked car in the field.
Right.
And really, really amazingly interesting guy. Completely Fruit Loops, but completely interesting. Because he's living between these two volcanoes, two extinct volcanoes, and he's living between the two of them.
Right.
And he calls them, these are Heaven's Gates. The entrance to Heaven's Gates is each side's like the entrance, yeah.
Right.
And he's telling me about all the visions he sees of stuff flying around and weird clouds and the moon shooting through the sky. And my eldest, Emily 10, she's kind of looking at me, and she's got this bemused look on the face saying, yeah, I don't believe a word of this, but I'll be fine. I'll listen. You know, so 5.8 kilometres, it's 2.9 there, 2.9 back. But I didn't realise it was that far away until I got it back. Oh my God, look how far I flew this thing, you know. And the drone still had like 25% battery.
Wow.
Which is quite astounding.
What did you just do?
Nothing, why?
Oh man, your volume just increased like 150%.
Really?
Yeah.
Just did nothing?
Whoa.
What about now? Is it really loud still, or is it just...
Yeah, no, now it's good.
Oh, maybe the signal cleared up.
Yeah, man, it just improved massively.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, cool. No. Well, that's...
not sure where I was. I only used 75% of the battery.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And still had 25% left, so I could have gone another kilometre or so, but wouldn't have got it back. So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you may recall from our last episode, I think it was, I talked about the disaster in India, where they shifted the dates of the
festival. Yes.
So I get this message from one of my contacts in Varanasi yesterday. He goes, they changed it again. Back to the original dates.
Oh, nice.
So theoretically, possibly, it's still on.
Excellent.
So, but it's one of those things you have absolutely no confidence whatsoever.
Yeah.
So you show up and you'll see what happens.
Yeah, right.
It was kind of weird. I went and jumped on the new phone bandwagon with the new Apple phone. Last week, it hasn't arrived. I really want to improve the camera. I love shooting with my phone. And especially when I travel, it's really very immediate. And some of my favourite pictures from last time in India were done with my iPhone.
Right.
So the exponentially improved cameras over the last 6 months was a 6S Plus. So this is two generations down the track, and the new ones are significantly better, and they've got the two lenses, the tele lens and the wide lens and stuff. So I'm hanging out to get that and put that to the test.
Yep.
And it's got the ability now to blur out backgrounds.
Right.
To simulate DSLR, which is cool. What else have I been up to this week? Oh, here we go. Talking about Facebook, telling us how popular the David Marland episode was. Yeah. It's also messaging me all week long saying, should I think 257 people haven't heard from you in a while?
Yeah.
I wrote back to it. Yeah. I responded. I said, well, I haven't heard from them either. Yeah. We've got the enormous seven that posted them. If there's 257 people on our Facebook page and only five or six reply every time, it's like, hang on. Yeah. I've heard from them. They can't complain about me.
Yeah.
And lastly, the last thing I've been doing this last week or two, I spent $11 on an app.
Right. Wow.
But I know people these days balk at 99 cents for an app.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So $11. $11 is a fair significant sum.
Which app?
And what's mostly amazing about it is I didn't just email them and say, send me a free copy. That in itself is awesome. So it's called Camera Axis.
Right.
I don't know what it's called, Camera Axis, but it is. It looks to be, and I only got it today and I'm just playing around with it, it looks to be a remarkable app for Facebook and social media, Pinterest type marketing stuff. If you do a bit of social media stuff, where it does all the graphic design, it's a graphic design app basically.
Oh, okay.
With a major range of fonts, layouts, and all sorts of stuff. So it's pretty darn cool. The amount of stuff this thing can do, which is why I sort of felt it was worth the massive investment.
Yeah.
It's a tax dodge.
Yeah.
The massive investment. But it's got just remarkable volume of templates and stuff. So it's a good say. If you are online and do a little bit of that sort of online marketing and you want to save yourself a heap of time building stuff, this Camera Axis is definitely worth a bit of a gander.
Excellent. And so you haven't had much of a chance to play with the app yet, I assume.
I've done a few. Yeah. I put one up online.
Yep.
But the rest I've sort of just been playing myself.
Cool.
And, loving it.
Excellent.
Very cool.
Excellent. So we'll move on to some stories, shall we?
Let's look at some stuff.
Yeah. The first one that I found this week was a Japanese artist who basically takes a series of photographs over time and then displays them all basically mounted on a wall but sticking out from the wall. So it's like a three-dimensional depiction of a location as that location changes over time, which is really trippy. You kind of have to see the link that I've included in the show notes. Some of them are hung in a circular array from the ceiling, so you sort of walk inside the circle and you can look at all these images over a period of time of the one location. And yeah, it's just a very interesting take on the movement of time, but rather than just doing a single long exposure, it's a series of, typical type exposures, measured in fractions of seconds, but then all printed and displayed side by side, so you see the changing environment in each frame. It's a very interesting concept.
It's like those little flip books you used to get.
It is exactly like that.
You flip them and it shows the animation.
Yeah.
It's just out in the big picture. It's just copying somebody else's idea.
Yeah.
Might do it myself.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned the new iPhone, because one of the things that has been included in the new iPhone is .heic compression for images.
I see. It does.
Did you know about
this? I thought it's HEIF.
Well, I've seen references to HEIF HEVC and HEIC. I'm not sure what all of those acronyms stand for, but what I have managed to work out so far is that these HEIC images are not compatible with JPEG. And as a result, you can't just share them with non-iPhone users. And while iPhone users like to think that they are the majority, the reality is that they aren't. There are far more Android devices in the world than there are Apple devices. And it means you can't send an HEIC image to somebody else via email, via text or whatever, unless they're on another iPhone of this vintage. Like even someone with an old iPhone won't be able to open them. So interestingly, Petapixel had a story that there is a website which will convert HEIC images into JPEG so that if you've shot in this HEIC format and you just want a regular JPEG that you can share to social media or share with your friends or whatever, you can just drag and drop onto this website. It'll do the conversion, pump out a JPEG, and you can send your JPEG off. Now, apparently the reason for shooting in this HEIC format is it does a much better job of data compression than even JPEG.
Only uses half the space or something.
So I was not familiar with the format until I saw the story, not being an Apple person. But yeah, so that link will be in the show notes. So for anyone else like Glyn who's got themselves the new iPhone and is shooting HEIC images and wants to share them, this website might come in handy for you to convert those images into JPEGs.
I'm just looking at this article here. Sorry, Android fans, but the iPhone is still the world's most popular smartphone.
Yeah, that's bollocks.
No, it's not. It's completely true. This is actual market research. So against your, I'm going to throw out there. And I can prove it simply and easily without even having read the article. I know why.
Why?
Just how many Android devices are there?
Millions and millions and millions. Oh, manufacturers. Yeah,
how many
lots.
Manufacturers?
Lots.
Yeah, versus one. So yeah. Apple might only sold 100 million, but they sold 100 million iPhone 7. You may have sold 200 million Androids, but that's over 50 brands.
Yeah.
So it's still the most popular phone because it's one phone that sold 100 million.
Okay.
There might be more Android phones out there, but Apple is still the most popular phone. Phone.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You can look at it that way, and
you can see why they could still dominate by changing a platform like that. And got everyone else to say, like, oh well, we better do something to make it work for us as well, because it's still the biggest. So interesting. So it's like Canon saying, or like Sony saying, the most popular camera in the world, if their one model of the entire range sold more than anyone else's.
Yeah.
But overall, Canon or Nikon are still trouncing Olympus and Sony and whatever in sheer volume because they're selling so many of their entry-level stuff or whatever. Yeah, so it's always skewing figures. As we know, you can always make results sound the way you want them to if you're creative with a bit of words.
Exactly. Yeah. Carl sent me an email and said, hi, Bruce and Glyn.
I just thought of something about this HEIC.
Yep.
A lot of the photo industry, retail printing people, like you go to store and whatnot, their kiosks, most of them already converted over to have an automatic conversion to JPEG software built into it.
Right.
And so if you go in there with a smartphone, you'd never know anything different.
Yep.
You just go in there, you just be able to access them, be able to print them straight away, et cetera, et cetera. So, all those people involved in the printing side of dealt with that problem.
Yeah, right.
So that's interesting.
Yeah. So Carl sent us an email, said, hi, Bruce and Glyn. In reference to then and now photographs, my friend David Colopy, whose website is davidcolopy.com, had a gallery of Melbourne photos showing what was and how they look today. Here's the direct link to the photographs, and I'll put that link in the show notes. And then there's another link at the heraldsun.com.au, which is obviously a story about David Colopy's exhibition. So all the best, Carl. So I will put those two links in the show notes for anyone that wants to check out some photos of Melbourne historically and current day. Steve Peters has sent us a whole bunch of things over the last couple of weeks. This first one, which he found on F-Stoppers, is all about the rise of iPhone photography and how it's making such inroads even in the commercial world, you know, with magazine covers being published that were shot with iPhones and whatever. And he says, I like the last sentence of the article. So essentially, as I've said, you know, the summary of the article is all about images being shot with iPhones and then, you know, making the covers of things like Elle magazine, Billboard magazine, whatever. And the last sentence in the article is, what you have to say and how you say it is more important than what you say it with. Which I agree.
The tools, it's for using it.
Yeah, well, I'll read the whole of the last part because it actually puts it in a little bit more context. Gear only matters in so much as it's able to deliver what the job requires. An iPhone is more than capable of producing a photograph suitable for printing at 8.5 by 11 inches. If anything, this entry by camera phones into the world of commercial photography should be a boon to photographers. It signals that vision is what is really important, that the mind behind the gear is what matters and not the glass. This means that gear should not hold you back or make you scared of competing in the marketplace. What you have to say and how you say it is more important than what you say it with. Couldn't agree more, Steve. It was great.
Couldn't agree more.
What?
Couldn't agree more.
Okay, fair enough. Nikon is in the spotlight over sexism row. I haven't had a chance to read this story. This was on BBC. Are you across this story, Glenn?
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah, that's why I put up a week or two ago. I put up on my Facebook page. I put up a banner saying I'm a female photographer in that Nikon I am. Basically, what it is, so my mate Mark Watson is a Nikon ambassador,
right?
And he was invited to the launch of the Nikon D850 in Asia,
right?
With 52 or 56 of his fellow Nikon ambassadors,
right?
For the big launch, and it was a big hoo-ha and the shoots and blogging and blah blah blah. Right. And then they did the big group. Then they did the big group photo, and all 52/56 were men.
32, yeah. Wow.
That's the ones, yeah, 52, 56, 32, same thing. Every single one was a man, not a single female present.
Wow.
So all the female photographers kind of got a bit antsy, as at face value they should have.
Yep.
Yeah. Now Nikon Asia, and then we're talking genuine Nikon Asia, not Western Nikon Asia.
Right.
So Asia, who have, of course, a very different viewpoint than we do.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's not a Western, it's an Eastern, not a Western viewpoint. Claim they invited a whole bunch of their female Nikon ambassadors, but none were available.
Right.
So
that seems a bit odd.
Possible. It's possible. Yeah, they might have been all being busy on jobs that pay money rather than over there and, you know, flounce for nothing.
Yeah.
So it's possible. And the thing is, you wouldn't just go and invite any old person along who's a Nikon ambassador because, well, yeah, they're not a Nikon ambassador. So it's possible. So it went on, but it does highlight the disparity between male and female photographers. And you see a lot of events. There's a lot of men up there talking, you know, a bit like myself, and a lot less women. So I'm not saying there's a genuine issue. Not saying it's hard to phrase this sort of stuff. Not saying there's not an issue there, but I'm not saying necessarily there is an issue there.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not a whole industry-wide issue. So you maybe look at the brands that are out there and, you know, who do they support, and go look at any page and see if you can see their ambassadors. Get a bit of feel for their demographics. Are they mostly men? Are they mostly women? If they're mostly women, what kind of products are they selling? Is that then gender-specific against men? You know, you go look at most baby photographer websites, you're not going to see very many men ambassadors.
No.
You know?
No.
So there's all sorts of stuff like that. Not saying it's right or wrong, but I think it was the exception, you know, a little too simply.
Yeah.
And, I don't think Nikon handled it very well in their explanations and dealing with it, because I don't think, Nikon USA didn't step up and say anything. Nikon Australia, that I know of, didn't step up and say anything. And
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, interesting stuff.
Yeah. The next story I said we're not going to cover. Thanks for the link, Steve. Excellent. I will put it in the show notes, but we're not covering it. I'll read the headline and most people will know who it is. This artist is making mega millions stealing people's work. And that's still, all. That's all we're going to say about that one. Next one.
Nikon, we don't talk about me like that.
Nikon is making a full frame mirrorless camera. Man, you got to love these people who are on the cutting edge, don't you?
The rumor is a thing.
Oh, dear. So, what, you're saying it's only a rumor that they're making one?
Well, who knows what's going to actually happen? Who knows if they'll even have the money?
Well, that's a good point.
Put it together, you know? So just see what happens.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not going to happen anytime soon. And they have patented a 36mm 1.2 and a 2mm 0.9.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll come out with some decent lenses, not like the Sony clony ones. Sony who rely on converters to make everyone, to have enough lenses to go around. Always adapters to make things work. And here's the other matter. Once you put these lenses on, they're just as big, if not bigger, than SLR anyway.
That's right.
Those lenses are goddamn huge and heavy.
Yep.
So any possible benefit as far as my camera's smaller is gone. You may prefer the form factor. That's good. But there's a guy on digital photography school who, if I haven't met him, I think I'll just walk up and headbutt the guy. All he ever does is every day he's talking about how superior shooting with mirrorless is and how stupid people are for shooting with DSLRs.
Yeah.
And every day, and the problem is he can't take photos to save himself anyway.
Right.
He keeps putting these aimless bloody examples there about how great his mirrorless camera handled this situation and how poorly a digital SLR would do. And I'd say, well, I don't care if it handles the situation fantastically or not. Learn how to take a photo. as you said before, the gear that shoot that makes a difference. It's the ability to take a bloody. What are you saying in your photos? And then he was an example up the day about how fantastic the focusing system is on Sony versus DSLRs, and he was showing these photos of running, and they were all just diabolically boring. I mean, it was just like you wanted to just headbutt your computer.
Right.
So, well, who cares?
Yeah.
If you can, I don't care how sharp that photo is. If it's not interesting, it's not interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care how well the autofocus tracked it. If it wasn't good, we took an article a few weeks ago about a guy shooting Formula Racing with his Graflex camera.
Yeah.
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 He's got no autofocus tracking, Sony, mirrorless. He's doing it old school.
Yep.
But if his photos are interesting, they're interesting.
Yeah.
They ain't the gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to get on this thing. This guy, stop going on about the gear. Stop. And the problem is he's on this thing. He's always pontificating. He's like the guru of the website.
Right.
Yeah? He's just some schmuck who comes on. But he's always out there giving his advice, and everyone calls to him. And it's like, yeah, and I got into it with him a few weeks ago.
I
should know better than to engage online with people like this. But he was going on about how he always has to fix photography teachers' all the stuff they tell the people wrong. He every day he's fixing people's photography because all these teachers have said the wrong thing. People had to shoot wrongly every single day. And he was basically saying that there's never a time to shoot in manual.
What?
There's no exactly, but he was going on and on, and there's time and place for him. So I went in gently. There's time and place for him. Blah 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 blah, and on and on. He kept coming back with more and more names. So I finally said, look, I've trained, personally trained, one on one in front of over 10,000 photographers.
Yeah,
I know what I'm talking about. I know how to explain, because he was saying manuals is too complex for a beginner to understand. And I said, well, I can teach people to shoot and get every photo right in manual within a day, because it's not bloody hard at all.
No.
And he's come back with I'm sure I've fixed some of your customers at the point. He goes, one day I'm going to write a book about everything I know. And so all my response to that was, excellent. Write the book, then fix everyone who reads your book.
Given that he said one day I'm going to write a book, you should have said, what are you going to do the day after that?
It's just like, once again, these people, they're all out there espousing and pontificating about, I don't know whether he's trying to justify his own decision for using this camera, because it sure as hell seems that way.
Right.
Everyone's going to agree with him about how fabulous shooting with mirrors is compared to the stupid people who shoot with SLRs. Well, guess what? I've got bloody big hands. I don't like shooting with a small camera because it doesn't fit in my hand very well, and I'm always knocking the damn buttons.
Yep.
And I hate those eye sensor things that when you put your eye near the viewfinder, the screen turns off. Because every time I point at the screen to show someone, the screen, there's so many damn things about the technology I can't stand.
Yeah, right.
Give me a manual with priority and aperture priority SLR.
Yep.
That's it. Features.
On top of all of that, the one downside that the mirrorless cameras have is battery life.
Well, that's the thing again. He'll argue with you there as well. Because he'll prove how many shots he's taken with this Sony and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. On. And he's done tests.
Okay.
So, and I agree, some of them are getting better. But it is a small hobby. And you are using more screen because even the viewfinder is a screen. So, it's going to eat power.
Yep.
And here's the thing. Batteries have never been an issue. In any camera, you just bring more batteries. Frankly, gee, battery life's a problem. Buy two or three of them.
Yeah.
If you're always running out of batteries, have some more. Whether you've got SLR or mirrorless, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what camera you've got. That argument is moot either way. Right. If you run out of batteries, it's a problem. If you don't run out of batteries, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
It just depends on how you shoot and how much you shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, tosses everywhere, I think.
Anyway.
You know me, I'm always subtle about my opinions and stuff like that, and like to
I've noticed
stuff to myself.
When once you learn to open up, mate, you'll be just fine. Next story: NYC photographer loses only copy of wedding photos on the subway. Now, I just don't know what to say about this. This guy has to be a clown. It happened on a Monday, which means he probably shot the wedding on the weekend. And I've got to wonder, why the hell had he not backed up these images? I know when I shoot a wedding, I have a backup within 6 hours of finishing the wedding, whether it's just to a laptop or, you know, an external hard drive. But find a freaking way to back up those images, because it's not something you can go and reshoot. You know, and he left his backpack on the train, for crying out loud. Like, seriously.
Well, I had a friend of mine. She flew from Queensland to South Australia, so that's a reasonable...
It's a four-hour flight. Well. Yeah.
Yeah, for people who don't. To photograph her husband's aging relatives or something like that, aging mum and dad.
Right.
You know? And she loves photographing old people, so she photographed it there for a whole weekend, shooting an entire weekend, coming back via Melbourne for some reason, I can't remember why. I was going to visit some friends, something like that. Somehow dropped her memory card whilst going to the hot car. Now, she never ever takes a memory card out of the car, she's really, really safe. But for some reason, this one day, you change your routine, drop the memory card somewhere in the car park at Tullamarine Airport.
Ooh.
And, of course, never to be seen again, you know. So you can see how devastating that stuff can be. And it's really easy to do, you know.
Yeah. Look, maybe I'm just pedantic on stuff like that, but if I'm being paid to do a job, I make sure I've got a way to back up those images as soon as the shoot is finished. And if it's a multi-day shoot, then I want to be backing up every day, you know. And
so you're annually retentive that way, which is good.
Maybe
it's a good thing. It's saved you in good stead. I mean, you'd never leave a camera bag laying on the ground.
No,
stuffing it.
No, you would never do that. That would be a ridiculous thing to do. But if you were silly enough to do it, at least you have a backup of every day's images. But I mean, that's my point, though. Like, you know, okay, yes, that was a stupid thing to do, and yes, I lost my gear, but at least I didn't lose one single image from a month on the road.
Yeah.
Because I backed up every night, you know? And I guess I was just fortunate that on that particular day, I had been shooting on the one memory card all day, and that was the memory card that I've still got in the camera at the time the bag got stolen. So I didn't lose any images even from that day. If I had changed cards, then whatever card I had started shooting the day on, I would have lost. I just don't get it. If you're being paid to do a gig, have a way to back those images up as soon as you possibly can. It's just common sense. Anyway. Yeah, exactly. All right. Adam sent us a couple of stories. The first one was about the Phase 1 industrial aerial system. It's a 190 megapixel camera for aerial use. This is an interesting-looking beast. It's obviously not something you're going to carry around and hold up to your eye. It's the DSM-400.
No. You get someone else to hold it up for you.
Yeah, that's right. A team of Sherpas to hold it up to your eye. So it's a 190-megapixel camera. Features two CMOS sensors and two 90mm lenses for capturing RGB information. Large image area of 16,470 pixels on the long edge by 11,540 pixels on the short edge. That's awesome.
That's a lot.
And a high image... No, mate, it's about half what your iPhone shoots. High image capture rate of 0.6 of a second and an exposure time of up to 1/2000th of a second. Yeah. So the camera's small size, light weight, and low power consumption make it compatible with almost all types of light aviation vehicles, including those that previously couldn't manage a large format system. So I don't know how big or small that makes the camera, but it certainly looks chunky in the photo. The other story that Adam sent us was Canon's new virtual camera tech. Yes. Is something straight out of sci-fi. Now, I watched the little teaser video that was on this Petapixel page.
Yeah.
And it looks freaky. I don't know how they do this.
I was thinking, this is not that dissimilar from what I was saying about with the Insta360 camera. It's a V2.
Yep.
If you're filming everything, you can look at it from every angle.
Yeah. But have you
it's
watched
the same
that?
Same kind of thing.
But, have you watched the video?
Yeah, but if you're using multiple cameras.
Yeah.
See, I mean, once again, I can zoom parts of this 360 footage and look like I'm much closer to it. I can zoom way back and look like it's a mile away,
yeah.
All with this little tiny little $299 camera. So imagine if you've got a really expensive camera shooting in 8K footage,
yeah.
You could zoom in from any, and you've got cameras all around covering every viewpoint, shooting 360. You probably only need like 20 360 cameras around the venue to
right,
do it.
Right, okay.
You capture every angle and every viewpoint,
yep.
And with enough resolution that you can zoom in on any part of it.
Yep.
Yeah, I can certainly see it. And okay. it's if you can do it with a $299 camera, there's no reason why you couldn't do it with the mega money that sporting
for sure
people use. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I said it doesn't look like it's completely unrealistic, futuristic. Stuff that's never going to happen.
Oh,
it actually looks like stuff that's actually possible.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not far off from being ready for prime time. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. That could change. That could change Canon's future though too.
As a company.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could change everything that they're doing. As we know, the revenue from photography is dropping off.
Yep.
Could revolutionise. Video, how we view the world and all formats of media, like television, movies, etc. There could be some big bucks in that.
Mm-hmm. Rob Coates sent us an email, said, "G'day, Inks. This is a time-lapse video of a container ship's passage from the Red Sea to Hong Kong with a couple of stops on the way. 80,000 images taken over 30 days. It's a 10-minute video, so I was intending to skip through and watch a few seconds here and there. Instead, I sat fascinated through the whole thing, and I'm just about to download it so I can watch it again on the TV. So settle back with a beverage of choice and enjoy. Regards, Rob." And I'm going to say, Rob, I started watching it, and I could not pull myself away from it. I watched the whole 10 minutes. It was unreal. It's just fascinating to watch, you know, the sun come up, sun go down, the stars moving through the heavens over, you know, as it's sailing through the night, and, you know, and then when it gets into port and you see all the cranes moving over it and picking up boxes off the deck and taking them away and putting new ones on, and it's just it's mesmerizing. I mean, it sounds really boring, but it's actually.
But that's what for you, that'd be like, you know, Hoggy. That's your kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And it sounds boring to the rest of us.
and with regards last week's non-episode, he said, on behalf of the other six.
Episode ever?
On behalf of the other six, many thanks. It's much appreciated. Thanks, Rob. Now, a couple of weeks ago, the last time Glyn was on, so 3 weeks ago, I talked about having seen a video on YouTube where a guy explained that, you know, when you're shooting with a 10-stop filter, you can use however many seconds at 6400 ISO would equal the number of minutes at 100 ISO. And then the following week, I came back and I said, that's a load of bollocks because it's only 7 stops and you need 10 stops for the 10-stop filter. And so David Marland and I agreed that what I had originally talked about must have been erroneous. I have since received an email from Lior in Israel. And he said, hi, Bruce.
First, I'd like to dedicate this episode.
Yeah.
It's a bit late, but I know we're a fair way in.
Yeah.
But we'd like to dedicate the episode to it because he's a long-time listener.
Yes.
First-time writer.
Yes.
So, thank you. That probably is Leo down the bottom and Lior up the top. So.
I'm guessing that because Lior is not a common name in certainly in Western culture, that maybe he just finds it easy to say it's Leo. Because Lior,
we call you Bruce instead of wanker.
Yeah, something like that. All right. I'm a long time listener, and I just finished listening to episode 384, the Reg Vardy one. You talked about a method of computing long exposure times by setting ISO to 6400, measuring exposure, and then setting the ISO to 100 and exposing for minutes instead of seconds. You said that the system doesn't work because there are 7 stops between ISO 100 and ISO 6400, and you were using a 10-stop filter. Well, there are 6 stops between those ISOs, 2 to the 6th is 64, and that method does work. It's just that you need to use ISO 6400 and ISO 100 under the same conditions. In other words, if your measured exposure time at ISO 6400 was 5 seconds with the ND filter on, then it will be 5 minutes at ISO 100 with the ND filter. If it was half a second without the ND filter at 6400, then it will be 30 seconds at ISO 100, again, without the ND filter. The ND filter only changes the exposure times, not the ratio between them. Using ISO 6400 enables you to quickly gauge exposure using the histogram, white balance, exposure, focus, etc., before committing to a very long exposure at ISO 100. Note that with a 10-stop ND filter, the exposure time difference is likely to be times 120, not times 60, because at ISO 100, the exposure time will probably be longer than 1 second, triggering dark frame subtraction, which takes the same time as your exposure. Hope I helped. Thanks for a great podcast. Leo from Israel.
Now, could you start the bit again after hi, Bruce?
Why?
Just, well, something about times to the x of the 120 to the 42, 19... something. I got a bit confused halfway through there.
Which bit? Oh, bit he said. He Bruce. Said, "Well, there are 6."
I'm good. I'm joking. Just a bit after hi, Bruce. Start that again.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, that's very handy information for those people out there doing that
it
stuff.
It is. And I thank you, Leo, for sending that info. I know I emailed him back and I said, that's great, thanks, and I'm going to try it. And I still haven't got around to going and trying it. But I will. I will at some point. Sure. I promise. So Glyn, we're down to your stuff. You've got 3 stories.
I've got nothing. I'll never forget those. But here's the thing, that it's kind of bad to have listeners who actually know something about dogry, and then there's us.
That's right.
I think we're on the wrong end of the stick. Maybe we should be listening to his podcast.
Maybe.
My only thing I would add this week, because no, we've already kicking on a fair bit of time, was I noted today that Manfrotto have just bought out Lowepro and Joby.
Wow.
So Lowepro bags. But here's the thing that really amazed me. They bought both Lowepro and Joby tripods for only $10.3 million.
Okay.
Which doesn't seem an awful lot of money.
No. I mean, I wouldn't expect Joby to be a huge company because they really only have one product it's multiple products, but it's essentially based on one piece of IP.
One product, multiple varieties, yeah.
But Lowepro, I would have thought, would have been a much bigger company than, you know.
You would have thought. That's what really surprised me. It was like, hang on.
Yeah.
That's pretty much at all.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Just thought I'd bring that one up and that's it for me.
Okay, cool. All right, mate. What are you got on for the rest of the week?
Just two holidays still, another week and a half. Holidays. Then they're gone. Actually, my youngest goes off to cub camp for a week next week. Not my youngest, my eldest.
Yeah.
For a cub camp next week, so she's away. My wife's up in Sydney for a few days, so I'm going to take the young one away down the coast somewhere. So they might not be there next week. I think I'm away.
Right, okay.
I'll throw that in right now. Right. And I make Rob pretty happy. he can play his week without us. So I'm going to take it down. There's a little area down in country, Western Victoria. It's got some lovely old ruined houses and some nice coastline. We might go for a bit of a drive.
Yeah, nice.
Try out Leo's 10-stop. I don't have a 10-stop filter. try out some stuff. Just go for a drive, have some fun with the kiddo. I haven't got a workshop. I'll take the weekend off to hang out with the family. And that's really it. Yeah.
Nice.
Nothing really much planned. I'm just crossing my I's and dotting my T's and some of my India stuff.
Yep.
And my Bangladesh tour, down only one spot left, so it's just finishing that. And got a few little tweaks to go on my Cuba. The Cuba trip's open, but it's up in a bit of the fonts, a bit of the text on the website. My offside is away in Vietnam at the moment.
Right.
And it's on his computer, so I can't change that.
Oh, no.
I'm in the midst with my good mate Dave Oakley of revamping website, so that'll be about two-thirds of the way through that. So I'll just be looking away behind the scenes doing stuff like that as well. And when I say working away behind the scenes, I mean, he'll email me, say, send me this photo, and I'll do that, and that's it.
That'll be the limit of your involvement.
He does all the work. So that's really good for me. I'm not a great deal on.
Excellent.
But I'll sure be flying my drone and 360 and taking the odd photo.
Fantastic.
Anything exciting?
Max has been away all this week. He does Army Cadets, and
That's right.
Once a year they go off on what's called AFX, the Army Field Exercise. So he and all of his cohorts from his cadet unit, plus five other cadet units in this region, are all out at the Singleton Army Base having a whale of a time living in the bush. So he'll come home on Saturday morning smelling like a bloody shearing shed because he won't have had a shower in 8 days. And so Kath and I have been living the empty nest life for the week, which has been great. So, but other than that, just
kicking. Start getting used at some stage, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Get a bit of a taster, see if you still like each other.
Yep, absolutely. So that's about it. So
cool.
All right, mate. Well, good to talk to you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.
All right. Well, I'll check in with you next week and see whether or not you're around.
See what day I am. And,
if you're not, I'll get someone competent to co-host with me.
I wish you wouldn't.
All right, mate. Have a good one.
Take care, everyone. See Bye.
Okay. Let's wrap it up with another book review from David Marland. What do you got for us, David?
Thanks, Bruce. A book called The Art, Science and Craft of Great Landscape Photography sounds a bit ambitious, but Glenn Randall seems to do it fairly well. From the outset, Glenn is very clear about what he's trying to do, and that is, photographically, he is trying to reflect his experience in the landscape into a well-crafted image. His philosophy in the book is, master the science and craft, and the art will follow. And from a science perspective, Glenn looks at geography, optics, vision and psychology. He talks of atmospheric optics, which may sound pretty complex, but the approach Glenn takes is logical and interesting. The book starts with a bit about landscape photography looks so easy, which essentially begins with the notion that it's simply a matter of putting your camera to the eye and take the photo and you've got your landscape. But when you get home, most of those photographs fail. Glenn talks about the search for extraordinary landscapes. He talks about visualizing your photograph. And this is about using things like maps, predicting moonset or predicting sunset relative to a landscape feature. The Art and Science of Light chapter, apart from talking about lighting fundamentals, talks about things like sunset light, white haze, and rainbows, and even predicting rainbows. Another chapter is entitled The Perfect Exposure and talks about four different strategies to achieve the exposure you want. There's more about digital capture and processing, particularly for tricky scenes, and a bit about night landscapes. And the book finishes off with The Psychology of the Compelling Landscape. I enjoyed this book and I learned a lot. And Glenn seems to be able to convey very complex concepts in an easy, interesting way. He takes you down a path of discovery. And I found myself going quite often, oh, so that's why, as I discovered things that became very apparent. Rather than just reading it and bringing in a bit of knowledge, this path of discovery to me was about true learning. Glenn doesn't use a formulated approach saying what gear to use where, what f-stop, what shutter speed, or things like that. Rather, he leads you to discover your own approach. Another way to look at this book is this. Landscape photographers, unlike studio photographers, tend to be light takers rather than light makers. But this book tells you that you can shift the balance a bit by careful planning and a good understanding of the basics and a little patience. Don't just take the light, start to make some of the light. The Art, Science and Craft of Great Landscape Photography by Glenn Randall is published by Rocky Nook, and Rocky Nook has it for $39.95 as a softback, $31.99 as an ebook, and $49.95 as a combo. That's in dollars US, whereas Booko has the book anywhere from $36 to $82 Australian. And by the way, if you visit the Rocky Nook website and look up the author's gallery, have a look at Glenn's photos. And when on Booko, look up Glenn Russell. He has written some other very interesting works on bushwalking and photography. Cheers.
Awesome, David. Thank you. That sounds like a very interesting book. I think I'd really enjoy that one. Okay. All right. That will do it for another week. And until I speak with you again, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZincPodcast.com.